This interview podcast was recorded at the Coalition for Networked Information Fall 2011 meeting. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. In 2008, the Grateful Dead donated its entire archives to the University of California, Santa Cruz. I spoke with Ginny Steele, university librarian, and Robin Chandler, project manager for the Grateful Dead Archives. The University of California, Santa Cruz has been given the Grateful Dead Archives. What are contained in the archives, and what was the process for gathering and cataloging the materials?
Well, we got the archive in 2008. We were able to go into the 2,000 square foot warehouse that was stacked floor to ceiling with file cabinets and boxes. There were barely any aisles in the warehouse. We did know that there were tickets, there were backstage passes, there were show files, there were some business records, there were backdrops, there was artwork. We looked at just a couple of pieces that weren't wrapped up, but there was a window, a stained glass window that we saw, and other kinds of art. There were things that fans had sent to the band members that the band members had kept. So we knew that there was a lot of material there, but we really didn't know exactly what was there. So the first thing we had to do was really go through the collection and figure out what was included and how we wanted to organize it, and then start the process of going through and getting it physically organized and processed so that then we could turn it over to the team that Robin heads that's been digitizing the content.
I got involved, as Ginny was saying, when it got to the point where we needed to be able to build a digital resource. There's over 600 linear feet of content in the accretion that we've gotten so far, and there's more content that we're going to get. But you've got to be able to describe things very generally. But when you start to digitize, it's very different. You start to get at the individual level. You start to think about the fact that you've got 15 or 16,000 fan envelopes, which are the kind of material that Ginny was talking about when she said that they were fan-contributed content. And what's really wonderful is that 16,000 envelopes translate into being 32,000 scans because the fans decorated both sides, you know, by and large. And you start to, you know, envision, well, what does that mean to be able to, you know, to scan that? What does it mean to create a digital object out of something that's just a physical object? And what are the kinds of concerns that we have about that? I've been very much, as I say, involved in taking it to that next step, which is to take this wonderful physical material and turn it into a digital resource.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me, either one of you, the story about what those fan envelopes actually are?
There's a wonderful book that I could give a plug for as well. There's mm-hmm. a gentleman by the name of Paul Grushkin that just recently published a book called Dead Letters, and he's a great expert. He was involved with the band for many years, and so the story is very well documented there. So I will urge your fans of this EDUCAUSE show to look to Paul's book. But the story is with the envelopes is that there was a concert line recording that would go out at essentially sort of for each tour. And tours happened usually on an annual basis. And there was were announcements for then for what the tour destinations were going to be and how you could get tickets. And there were free tickets that were given out. And essentially fans would write for tickets and they would decorate the envelopes. And they're just incredible works of art, to be quite frank. I mean, they're just beautiful. We're very excited about being able to bring those out. The fans decorated them on both sides. They included a lot of the iconography or just illustrations of songs or albums. And the staff would actually keep and select some of them, which is how we got the archival material that we have today. An interesting thing to kind of bear in mind with it is the fact that there were some very strong relationships that actually came out of that process where the band began to identify individuals where they wanted them to begin to create posters, you know, for example. There's a wonderful lady who was a fan who was from Japan by the name of Miki Sato, and she did some beautiful work on her envelopes as a fan, and the band decided that they wanted her to do some posters for them as well.
Are these materials on display, and are there any plans to make them digitally available?
They're not on display yet, okay. But we actually have a room in our newly renovated McHenry Library at UC Santa Cruz that is known as Dead Central, and it will have a permanent exhibit with items from the archive as well as a rotating exhibit with other kinds of materials that come and go. So we're expecting that a lot of people will want to come to the campus to see what's there, and so this is our space to make some of that content available. Now, clearly we can't put it all out and have everything available for people who just walk in, so the rest of it will be in our special collections operation. But Dead Central will be open, and we'll be encouraging people to come and check out what we have.
Perhaps what I'll do is I'll just talk about the website a little bit, what it'll feature. You'll be able to search and browse the content. We've worked really hard to identify the kinds of ways that some of the fans would be interested in browsing the content. There's a number of really important photographers and artists that have been involved that fans are interested in getting to content that way. The show was preeminent in the experience to be able to bring up all of the content that would be associated with a given show. You know, if you were at the concert in I'm going to pick the most obscure one I can, but there was a concert at the Bob Marley Center in Jamaica, and if you were there, we've got material that came from then, be it photographs and posters and such. Or if you were lucky enough to be in Egypt when they played the pyramids, we'll have the material associated with that. So you'll be able to browse it by time. You'll be able to browse it by geographic location, using Google Maps to go into the content as well as a timeline. And again, some of these ways into the material, such as the photographers and artists. In addition to that, we're going to have exhibits which will really begin to help interpret the content. And Ginny, Special Collections staff, and myself, we've talked very much about the fact that what's in Dead Central will also be mirrored with what's online. We want to make sure that as exhibits change in Dead Central, that they are archived even online as we go forward, so that the knowledge that's put into creating an exhibit is preserved. And then if folks can't come to us, we can go to them.
What are some of the intellectual property challenges you've encountered in making the materials available on the web?
We've attempted to think about issues of honoring those copyright holders' interests by pursuing licenses with them to allow us to put material up, to try to do as much due diligence as possible, even though some of these things are only 30 years old. It's interesting to see how difficult it is to actually find people. We've been actually spending a lot of time trying to track folks down. Because we want to be respectful, because we want to do the right thing.
It's been an interesting set of legal barriers to get over, because even the campus, of course, is very concerned
right.
that we do things properly and not put the institution at risk. And
right.
so there have been various people involved with this, not just library people,
right.
but also campus council. Mm-hmm. And we've been trying to keep everybody in the loop and make sure that we all make decisions that we agree on so we can move forward in the way that makes the most sense.
Can you tell us what kinds of research and instructional use you anticipate for the Grateful Dead archives on your campus?
Well, actually, the way we found out about the collection originally was through a music department faculty member named Fred Lieberman, who is a longtime collaborator with Miki Hart. They've written several books together, and Fred has studied the band for years. So he actually teaches a class on the Grateful Dead that every time he offers it has more than 300 students enrolled in it. So It's a very popular class. And as soon as we got the materials on campus, he arranged with us for us to make things available to his class to come over and use. And we expect that that will continue to be the case. But we also expect that historians who study that period of time will be interested. The counterculture and that period in the mid-60s to mid-70s in particular, we think literature faculty, sociologists, there are already sociologists who do a lot of work on the Grateful Dead, including Rebecca Adams at the University of North Carolina. So lots of different areas of interest in this.
So can you give us an example of some of the three-dimensional objects from the Grateful Dead archives that you're trying to curate?
Yeah, we've got we have a collection of over 200 T-shirts that would have essentially come from concerts, you know, been associated with concerts. And some of the interesting things we've had to solve is thinking about what's the best way to digitize a T-shirt. And of course, it's a, you know, to give credit to our colleagues in other professions, you know, the museum world has had to deal with fabrics and textiles, you know, before. But so we did a little research into we talked to the archivist at Levi Strauss in San Francisco, you know, for example, because she's got blue jeans and such, and talked with her a little bit about ways that she's both managed those textile collections as well as thought about digitizing them. But there's some really interesting things. You know, we experimented with purchasing mannequins to see how they would hang on them. Interesting thing, there isn't really a generic body type. So we tried it on the mannequins, but decided that we didn't really like the way the T-shirts were fitting. We tried thinking about just sort of laying them flat and taking a studio camera and shooting them from above. That wasn't really working. But we ultimately decided to put them into a hanging sort of structure, actually using a sort of like almost putting them as if they were a flag, you know, running kind of a large dowel of wood through them so that they hung very uniformly. That enabled the photographer to start working in a real standardized way. One of the other challenges was sort of thinking about, well, how do we deal with some of these T-shirts, because some of them actually were dirty. They'd been worn. We needed to find out about the right way to wash that fabric. We needed to worry about wrinkles, you know, quite frankly, as well. And that's another place where, learning from our Levi Strauss archivist, we learned about a particular kind of steamer to use to get the wrinkles out. There were some interesting things, though, that happened through that, though, as well, where there were actually some interesting inks that were used in some of it, and it was actually giving a little bit of noxious odors out, and so we had to make sure that when the steaming was done, that there was plenty of ventilation, you know, for our digital photographer, because we didn't really want them to pass out. That was, you know, fundamental.
Ginny Steele, university librarian, and Robin Chandler, project manager for the Grateful Dead Archives. EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.